Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host Neil Reynolds from a very sunny London, but I'm guessing it's not as sunny and as warm as where my partner is, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, where are you?
Yeah, man, I'm in the cool Jamaica, you know, cool runnings here, bar.
Hang on a minute, hang on, because you said, Jeff, you always talk to me about once you get into the season that, you know, it's a grind. What's happening? You've only played two games. Why are you in Jamaica?
We got this crazy schedule where our bye week came in week three. And so we beat Winnipeg 52-26 the other night, and the head coach said, take some days. And so we just got on a flight and got down here and stuck my feet in the sand and have really enjoyed it. Jamaica's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Very nice. Jeff, let's transfer that thought to the NFL and the upcoming season then. Benefits or, you know, the pros and cons of an early bye week, because coaches tend to like to have them right in the middle of the season or later on. Would you, in an ideal world, not want one this early in the CFL season?
Well, in the ideal world, you're right. You'd like to have it. We actually have two in our league.
And, oh, okay.
You'd like to have one about midway through and then one about three games before the playoffs or a couple games before the playoffs, because it gives you a chance to get healthy. But you take them where you can get them. You know, certainly BC, one of the teams in our league, had a bye week in the first week, and that's really tough because you come out of training camp, you're ready to play, you've played the exhibition games, then you got to sit for a week. So, you know, we're fortunate that, you know, we have it right now. We've got a couple kids that are nicked that the week off will really help us because of the Pan Am games, which are going on right now in Toronto and Hamilton. We will play on the road the first 4 weeks of the season, the first 5 weeks when you count the bye. So for us, it's really not a bad time to get one.
No, absolutely. So we're going to go through some of the news in the NFL. This is supposed to be the quiet period, but there has been a lot that's been making the headlines. We're going to look at a little bit of the time I spent this week with Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts. We're going to give you our top five tight ends from around the NFL and answer your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, before we get to big news, United States side, news that relates to the games being played here in London and in the UK. And this week, the NFL announced a 10-year deal to play a minimum of two games per year at Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium, which is being built from 2018. That deal takes place. We can get into the nitty-gritty of the stadiums, and it's not an exclusive deal. It does allow the NFL to still play games at Wembley Stadium, at other venues. It doesn't restrict the NFL to two games per year. It just is a minimum of two games per year. And the first thing that jumped out to me, Jeff, is we've got two games per year until 2028. Pretty good stuff.
Well, I think it's amazing. Every time there's news, it seems like every time there's news out of the UK, it's more and more good news. And I think this is phenomenal. Actually, Neil, I know you'll get a chuckle out of this too. Remember back in 1995 when we used to play NFL yep. Europe games in the old Tottenham Hotspur ground,
yep.
And you could count the number of people that were in the stands. And now this thing has taken off to the point where I think the key thing with this deal is the language in the deal, and it says a minimum of two games, which opens the door for obviously more games, and now that opens the conversation now again about a franchise in the UK and the length of the agreement. So I think in all ways it's positive. I think it's positive for the game, it's positive for the NFL, and for NFL fans in the UK it's extremely positive.
And I think it does give flexibility when it comes to scheduling games, Jeff. I know this year coming up, there were challenges for the NFL because the Rugby World Cup takes place in the UK at the same time. So I think people need to be aware that this is not necessarily a turning of the back on Wembley Stadium. I think to have that opportunity to look at more stadia means we could have more games. You know, and another interesting thing with this, this stadium features a retractable grass field that is for use for Tottenham Hotspur. Underneath that field, Jeff, so it's pretty unique, is an artificial field that is for use for NFL games. So you could play, theoretically, an NFL game on a Sunday evening with Tottenham Hotspur having played the day before, or you could play hours before Tottenham Hotspur have a big game, and you would have no impact on their field, which, you know, from players and coaches' point of view, is a huge thing.
Yeah, it is. And I think from it also, as you know, Neil, one of the things that has always been problematic when we played in Europe was that FIFA and the soccer people are so picky about their grass, and rightly so. It's their game, and they don't allow you to play on AstroTurf or field turf or any of the synthetic grasses. So this is really a Cadillac Stadium and a great opportunity for, you know, to take away any argument that, well, you don't want the NFL in your venue because they're going to tear up your field, all those great big guys on that soft grass. And, you know, as you said, you know, we're going through it right now. The Pan Am Games are in Toronto and Hamilton, and we're out of our stadium for 3 weeks. So, you know, when you get into situations where, and this is the economics of the pro sport industry today, you have to keep those stadiums full. And you've got to juggle, you know, 32-team schedule in the NFL around stadium availability in the UK. And so I think the more opportunity there is to put our product in front of more fans in different venues, it's all positive. I just really think there's nothing negative about this deal. I see it as a tremendous positive. And I know that all those people, Alistair, and all those people in the front office that have worked so hard to get this deal done, another feather in their cap.
Jeff, I'm going to put my grumpy trousers on for 2 minutes and then we'll move on to the next story. I'm going to address a couple of things that were on Twitter. So a few fans were complaining that we're going from an 86,000-seat stadium at Wembley to 60,000 at Tottenham. So there's fewer tickets for them to buy. Well, only if these are the only two games. And never has it been said that these would be the only two games played per year. And I think any NFL team, if you ask them, if you were looking at a franchise, would you want a 60,000-seat stadium or an 86,000-seat stadium? You would work with a 60,000-seat stadium. I actually think this deal moves us, you know, closer to a franchise and increases the chances of that. And I can understand it. You know, again, it's all personal taste. You know, people like Wembley Stadium. People like, and I'm not knocking Wembley. We've had fantastic days out there, and I'm sure we'll have lots more in years to come. But, you know, I think you can complain if you like Wembley Stadium. You may be able to say, I don't like Tottenham for this reason, where transport, or it's not easy for me to get to, whatever it may be. But if you're just going to say, I'm not going there because it's Tottenham Hotspur's ground, then in my mind, those people need to grow up. That's it. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, the game is bigger than the stadium that it's played in. And obviously, Wembley is a beautiful, beautiful facility. But I've seen the renderings of what that stadium, Hotspur Stadium, is going to be like. And, you know, obviously, there is tickets will be at a premium for that, but that's what you want. That's what, you know, if you're in the pro sport business, that's what you want. And so I think in as you say, it'll be a tremendous opportunity for fans to see the game in a different venue and with a different sight line and a different, you know, different seating structure and all of those things. So it's, you know, when you look at the NFL, you know, you've got a variance of stadiums there. You've got huge stadiums, and you've got, you know, the ones that aren't so big, and it doesn't mean that the games are less attractive or, you know, less interesting when they're played in a smaller venue.
All right, let's move on to some other news from around the NFL. And Jason Pierre-Paul, one of two players, actually. We'll get on to CJ Wilson of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in a minute, but Jason Pierre-Paul injured his hand very severely, actually, in a 4th of July fireworks accident. He's fractured his thumb on his right hand, and the reports are that he's had the right index finger amputated all the way down to the very base of it, Jeff. So, you know, obviously a devastating injury for Jason Pierre-Paul. One of those things where you just look at, you just hope to avoid those kind of headlines in the off season. There was the news that the Giants rescinded a $60 million contract offer Jason Pierre-Paul's counter by saying they weren't going to sign that anyway. But the fact is $60 million has come off the table. First of all, your thoughts on that. And then I've got a question from the mailbag about the technique and how this is actually going to affect his career going forward?
Well, I think there's two things. First of all, you know, the posturing that Pierre Paul's camp is that we weren't going to sign it. Well, I'll tell you what, there's not going to be more than $60 million there after you blow your index finger off and hurt your hand severely. You're in surgery for hours yesterday in New York. That's just agents posturing. But I think the reality of the situation is here's two guys, Neil, that both are, you know, critical factor players with their football team, and on 4th of July don't have the common sense to handle fireworks at all, well, much less safely.
C.J. Wilson has lost two fingers, the reports suggest, and he was holding a canister. He wasn't even lighting a firework that was in a ground. He was holding a canister that was going to shoot the firework up into the air. I mean, you know, I would not tell my kids to go anywhere near that kind of activity in 100 years. And the canister explodes, the firework doesn't shoot out, and he loses two fingers.
Yeah, and I mean, you're a defensive back, and playing the ball is one of the things that you have to be able to do, and now you're going to have to do it with less fingers on your hand. Now, obviously, these guys can come back from these injuries. But it's, again, you know, one of the things that drives you absolutely nuts in coaching and you know, trying to put a team together. You know, here's your franchise pass rusher who goes out and makes a critical mistake. It sounds like I'm negative on Jason Pierre-Paul. I'm negative on what he did, not having any more sense than that in that moment. You know, it's such a fine line. It's the game is hard enough, right? The game is physical enough. The game is going to claim its own enough. That off season, you don't need to put yourself at further risk. Whether that's, you know, drinking and driving, whatever it is, that those you know, behaviors that guys seem to want to do, and all of a sudden you lose a player, and it's unfortunate, but it's, you know, something that the Giants are going to have to overcome now. And if you're in the East and you're one of those left tackles around the East, you know, the NFC East, you're thinking, well, life got a little bit easier today because, you know. Now he may not be ready for the start of the season.
Jeff, I just folded down my right index finger and tried to pick up a piece of paper on the desk, and it's not actually that easy. And we've got a question from Nick Boyd, who says, it may sound obvious, but just how big of an impact will the JPP finger amputation be on his technique? So we talk about hands, Jeff, on the defensive line, but, you know, and maybe it's not always grabbing. You know, as a defensive end, you're trying to swap people away from you. But there are times when you... Kind of, Paul Posluszny was showing me, you know, I know it's a linebacker, but it could happen for a defensive end. Sometimes you have to grab a jersey and then shed that block and make a tackle. I mean, has Jason Pierre-Paul's job just become that much harder? Because his people claim that the amputation will get him back on the field quicker.
Well, I think, first of all, what I've been able to find out about the amputation is that it was the entire finger.
Yes.
It wasn't the tip of the finger. It's all the way past the metacarpal. So that's all the way, that's the entire finger.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously those guys play with beat up hands all the time. I don't know if it's going to be that significant in terms of his techniques, Neil.
Okay.
But you got to understand, we're 4 weeks away from training camp, and he's laying in a hospital bed. And there's going to be rehab time. There's going to be time that he's going to lose getting himself ready to play. And I think that's the part that's going to be the toughest, because how much is he going to be able to run? You know, I mean, you're talking about having a finger amputated, and he's got obviously additional injuries to that hand. How many weights is he going to be able to lift? All of those things that now 4 weeks away from the opening of training camp, he's not going to be able to, you know, compete and train. That's going to set him back. There's no question about it.
Jeff, I want to.
And I think too, the other one is, consider also, you know, as you do your study on this stuff. He's refused to see his teammates. It's obviously psychologically taken a toll on the kid.
Yeah,
and that's the part you can't weigh. So, you know, anytime you turn away your teammates, I think that's a strong indication that your mental state isn't very good.
Yeah, it's a bridge that may be broken and not able to be mended. Certainly a lot of dispute going on with JPP and the Giants. And, of course, July 15th is when he's got to sign that franchise tender. That, given the state of the way relations are between the team and the player seems highly unlikely. Jeff, one thing I wanted to ask you about, which I thought was interesting, it's not been reported that widely, but Marcus Mariota is still unsigned, the only first round pick yet to sign a contract this year. A lot of that, according to reports, is because of offset language in the contract, which means that if Mariota was to be cut in year four of his contract and pick up money elsewhere from another team, yeah, that goes that cost goes back to the Tennessee Titans, and they don't have to incur. They get some money back, basically, and it's that's often a back and forth between player and a team. But there are also reports out there that the Titans want within Mariota's contract for him not to go surfing. And I think he countered by saying he does bodyboarding. But would surfing worry you as a coach? I mean, I know you've surfed as long as I've known you.
Well, I think the thing that you got to think about now, and this is, I would encourage Marcus to really take stock on this. The waves are always going to be there. You know, your NFL career is not going to be there forever. And I think that, you know, with this spate of injuries that we had around 4th of July, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you jeopardize that. And anytime you go in the water, particularly in heavy water like they have in Hawaii, and you know, bodyboarding or you know, body surfing or stand up paddling or longboard surfing, whatever kind, there's risk involved. And you know, obviously the Titans, who are paying his salary, they're trying to mitigate all the risk they can with the franchise quarterback. The kid's had a phenomenal OTAs. He's had a phenomenal, you know, mini camps. He's shown them everything that they wanted to see. And now what I think they're trying to do is just, you know, stand firm on the fact that they want to make sure that there's as little risk to them, which is their right as an organization. And I think they're right here. I think they do have the responsibility to make sure that he stays as safe as he possibly can in the off season.
And he can't just say, "I'll be careful, Jeff," because I remember you last year, just out of the blue, you had a nasty incident, didn't you? So you never know when it's going to come, do you?
No, and it's exactly right. I was down in Costa Rica last year, and you know, you get a rogue wave, and all of a sudden you're under, and that's the set comes in and pounds you. And, you know, that's the one time I've been in the water where I said, "Yep, that might be the last Inside the Huddle podcast."
That would have been a true tragedy. and losing you, of course, Jeff. JJ Watt's been named number one on the NFL's top 100. So. The top five was J.J. Watt at number one, Aaron Rodgers at number two, Tom Brady at three, DeMarco Murray at four, and Peyton Manning at number five. Any problems with J.J. at number one, Jeff? I bet there aren't.
You know, not in my book. And I think certainly, you know, any time a defensive lineman beats out a quarterback for that kind of an award speaks maybe more than anything about just how impressive he is as a player and how well thought of he is by people around the league, both the guys he plays with, the guys he plays against, everybody who sees him play. You know, I think really, truly, that may be more important than the Most Valuable Player Award in the league right now because of the fact that it is, you know, it hasn't been tainted with the fact that, you know, it's a quarterback every time you pick the Most Valuable Player.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not to take anything away from Aaron Rodgers, but J.J. Watt is just a rare, rare guy that can impact the game on both sides of the football. And you know, from his position on the field, it just playing end, you know, where if you think about it, well, you got a great end, what do? You run the ball away from him. And still, he can impact the game to that point where the quarterback has the ball in his hands every play. You know, I just think it's a true, true testimony to the kind of guy that he is and the kind of player that he is.
So that may answer this question. I'm going to grab this question out of the mailbag, Jeff. It comes from Hiron Cryer, who says, "You guys can start a franchise with either J.J. Watt, Richard Sherman, Darrell Revis, or Earl Thomas. Which one do you pick?" Jeff, I'll just tell you, actually, for me, I'm going to pick J.J. Watt every day of the week there. And I found, you'll enjoy this, I found this paragraph. It was doing the rounds on Twitter last week, and it came from Buddy Ryan's playbook. So Buddy Ryan had this in his playbook to tell his defensive players. He said, "A quarterback has never completed a pass when he was flat on his back. We must hit the quarterback hard and often. Quarterbacks are overpaid, overrated, pompous, beep, and must be punished. Great pass coverage is a direct result of a great pass rush. And a great pass rush is simply a relentless desire to get to the quarterback. So I'm going to say that the Hiron Cryer mentions three other defensive backs there. I would say that J.J. Watt would make them better players. So I'm going to go J.J. Watt.
I think you're completely correct. I think there's a guy that obviously makes everybody in the back end better because of his ability to get to the passer. But he makes everybody on the football team better. He makes everybody in the locker room better. Mm. His work ethic, his practice habits, his off-season habits, all of those things elevate every player around him because it's hard to be in that locker room. You know, the locker room's an interesting place, and it's alpha male heaven, right? And when you're the biggest alpha male and you're working the hardest, pretty tough for you to be one of the young lions. I think that's the other aspect that he brings that transcends his numbers on the field, the number of sacks and all those other things. You read that little Buddy Ryan piece, and boy, did that bring back memories, because I had an afternoon with Buddy on Maui with Robin, and Buddy, we just talked football, and he couldn't mention quarterback without a swear word. Every third word after quarterback had a swear word in it, because he just doesn't like them. I think the only one he's ever liked is Jim McMahon, and Jim McMahon was more guard than quarterback, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to talk about a quarterback now. He was number 7 on the NFL's top 100 list. He's just spent 3 days in the UK. I was very fortunate to spend that time with him. Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff, you know I'm a big fan already. I always have been ever since he came out. I just think he does things the right way. I've seen how he conducts his life and his business away from the field. We all know what he can do on the field. Monday night at Wembley Stadium, we had a fan forum, and we had probably about 25, 30 kids were in the audience, and we were going to bring up 5 children to catch a pass from Andrew Luck. He was like, no, let's get them all up. Let's just get them all. We had this huge long line sort of snaking off the stage, and they all got to catch a pass from Andrew Luck. On the Tuesday, he held a quarterback camp for young quarterbacks in the British League. So kids as young as, from 10 to 18 years of age. 6 hours they were on the field and in the classroom. And we finished probably about 15 minutes early than the schedule was going to allow. And we were done. And Andrew, I've seen players in those situations, they race for their car or they get out of there. And Andrew was like, any questions, any more questions? And the kids were, they were coming up with little questions here and there. And then they finished. And then he was like, come on, guys, I'm not going to be back here for another year. Let's, anything you want to know, I'll answer it. And it was just, you just talk about tremendous role models. All the kids went away. They went away as better quarterbacks, but they went away with huge smiles on their faces as well. And he just does it all. I always get a lot of stick. I know I'm the biggest sort of advocate of what he does on the field, but he just does it the right way off the field as well.
There's no question, Neil. And it really, it's something like that. That time that you spent with those kids, that time that you spent with those fans at the forum, that the NFL needs to record and play to those rookies at rookie symposium. Say, fellas, this is how you handle yourself in the media. This is how you handle yourself in the public. If you want to be a star, if you want to truly be an ambassador of the game and pay back what the game that's been so good to you, this is the way you do it. And, there's a saying that, a man never stands as tall as when he stoops to help a child. Mm. And that is so, so true. And, Andrew Luck really, I think he really appreciates everything that he has. I think he doesn't take for granted. He doesn't have a sense of entitlement that, well, I was drafted number one overall and, my father was an NFL quarterback. And, I think he just really, really, truly appreciates the forum that he has to do good. And I think that when a player does that, that's magical.
Yeah. And he, he's very, and modest with it as well. When I give the introductions onto the stage, you always go through a player's career accomplishments. So I'm there saying, yeah, three Pro Bowls, led the Colts to the playoffs in every season. No quarterbacks passed for more yards in, you know, in NFL history in his first 3 years. He gets up on stage like, seriously, we're doing all that? And then Wednesday morning, we're at a sponsor breakfast, and I'm introducing Andrew again. And so kind of halfway through, he's like, stop with all that. And I was like, well, you shouldn't be so good then, you know. But he is very, very down to earth, very good people around him, Jeff, as well. Oliver Luck was there helping run the camp. Oliver's been involved in football on, you know, many, many levels, whether it's administration and NFL Europe and the NCAA and as a quarterback with the Houston Oilers. He's just, I imagine he's got very good people around him giving him solid advice.
Yeah, and, you know, again, he's been blessed with the fact that he does come from a strong family background, and his dad was there for him all the time. A lot of these players today don't have that kind of, you know, support system, but still, I think it's really, really important that the players, young players in the National Football League, when they go to the rookie symposium, that they find out more about how to handle yourself and how to be an ambassador for the game, in addition to all the other things about how you take care of your money and how you stay out of trouble and all that other stuff. Because every time you go in the public as an NFL player, coach, or anybody that has anything to do with the NFL, the NFL is being judged by how you are. Yeah. And every interaction that you have with a small kid is a chance for you to make an NFL fan for life. And those kids, those 30 or 35 kids that caught a pass from him, they'll remember that for the rest of their life. It'd be as if, you know, Messi let you, you know, yeah, kick a soccer ball with. You know, how impressive would that be to a young kid? Because he is one of the superstars of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was a great few days. I think he made more fans. I think he made better players of the young people here in the UK. And I think it's going to be part of an ongoing commitment from Andrew to the UK. Of course, he spent some of his childhood here. I think he wants to be more involved in helping to grow the game, which is only good news as well for British American football fans. Let's move on to our tight ends then, Jeff, our top five tight ends in the NFL. But before we do that, this talk about the importance of this position and how it's become, it's going to be one of the in vogue positions, isn't it, in recent years, Jeff?
Well, you know what? They talk about the devaluation of the running back. Well, as that de-evolution, if you will, occurred, at the same time, the tight end position became more of a valued position. You know, this used to be kind of where you put that small offensive tackle that could block, yeah, or that big wide receiver who was, yeah, too slow to run down the field. And now it's really become a hybrid position with what offensive coordinators are doing today, spreading them all over the field, trying to create mismatch opportunities against linebackers and smaller DBs. The position has really truly evolved. And I think there's a time when that started to happen. If you really go back in NFL history and you go to the great tight ends of the past, and I'm talking about the Mike Ditkas, the John Mackeys of the world, mm-hmm, that after those guys, then you started to see just Jackie Smith and some guys that were really great pass catchers from the tight end position. And then offensive coordinators started to figure it out that, hey, let's divorce the guy from the formation. Let's get him out there wide and see what the defenses do. And then came this group that I call my Michael Jordans, because they're guys that really are basketball players,
yeah,
that came to football late. And, you know, you look at Jimmy Graham and what he's been able to do, and Martellus Bennett, who, you know, actually declared for the NBA draft when he was a high school senior in Texas, and Antonio Gates, who played basketball at Kent State, and Julius Thomas, again, a guy with a basketball background. Those kinds of guys revolutionized the position. They really, really changed the job description, if you will, of the tight ends.
Did they change it on their own, Jeff, or have they benefited from rules changes?
You know, that's a great question, Neil, but I think it's a combination of a couple things. First of all, they benefited from offensive coordinators who were willing to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Guys were willing to say, we're going to be a pass first team. This guy's going to be a guy who can help us defeat, you know, if you look at the history of the game, all of a sudden cover two comes in as a way to stop offenses. And so offensive coaches scratched around and they tried to figure out what they could do to beat cover two. And what they found was if they could get a long tight end who could run down the middle of the field and split that two high coverage,
yep,
then they would have a great chance to defeat cover two. And that's what you started to see. You started to see, even though guys like Jason Witten are now at the end of their career, when they came into the league, they had that ability to avoid the linebacker underneath and split the coverage and you know, get down in there. Heath Miller can do it really well. There's a bunch of guys now in the league who can do that. And so cover two's become a tougher coverage to play. And then, as we mentioned earlier, the rules changes come at the same time that offensive coaches are really starting to push the envelope in, you know, in what you did with that position. You know, it's a fascinating, you know, evolution of the position.
Yeah, and I think what's happened, Jeff, as well, because everyone's looking for tight ends, looking for that mismatch and that difference maker, that you have a proliferation of tight ends now. I mean, as I look at my list, and we'll go through it in a second, I think there are two true stars in the NFL at the tight end position. But after that, this is where I think this list was quite hard to come up with. After that, for the next three positions, I could have had as many as 10 players, and I don't think there's a lot between those guys. So, you know, I think there's two we can talk about in a moment who I think are quite near the top, but there's not much between everyone else, but there's a lot of everyone else.
Yeah, I agree with you, because, like, that's the same thing I did. I told you about my Michael Jordans, right? Mm. Then I got my Dickens, you know, kind of my guys that can block and, yeah, you know, that kind of throwback guy. And you know, you put Gronkowski in there because, oh, as great a pass catcher as he is a very good inline blocker. Kyle Rudolph, our buddy from our days on the road with the Vikings. Travis Kelce's a very good blocker, but caught 67 balls last year and 5 TDs in an offense that doesn't feature the tight end. Witten's a good inline blocker. Heath Miller's a good inline blocker. So those are my Ditkas. That's my other group.
Yeah.
Then I had another group. I couldn't put a finger on them because they're truly hybrids. You know, you look at Greg Olsen and Kobe Fleener, Charles Clay, Jordan Cameron, all guys that, God, you'd love to have them on your football team, but are they inline blocking tight ends? Nah, not really. They'll get in your way, but they're not going to be guys that are going to dominate at the point of attack. You know, they're not going to get the edge for you all the time. But, man, oh, man, you put them out there wide out, or you put them in the slot, or you move, get them in motion and play them as an H, they can create a lot of problems for you defensively.
All right, so here's my five then. I've gone at number five, Julius Thomas, now of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's had two consecutive 12-touchdown seasons. I've still got Jason Witten in the top five. I think declining physical skills, but still dirt tough and somehow gets the job done. So he's at number four. I've got Greg Olsen at number three. And I think actually only, it was only Gronkowski actually who had more receiving yards than Greg Olsen last year. I've got Jimmy Graham at number two. I still have images of him playing against the New England Patriots a couple of years back with Aqib Talib roughing him up and the Seahawks roughing him up. So I don't think he has that toughness, but he's a special talent in terms of creating mismatches. So he's at number two for me. And I've got a guy, and I use this statistic quite a lot. 20, 30 years ago, he'd have been playing offensive tackle in the NFL, and that's Rob Gronkowski.
I think you're right. I think Gronk could play if he never caught a ball. I think he's that guy. He's a football guy.
Here's
my five. All right. I got a tie at five, and I'm going to tell you why I tied him. You know, Gates still to me, and I agree with you in regards to Witten. These are guys that are now in the descending part of their careers. But I think when you look at the numbers that Gates still rings up, it's phenomenal. But young Travis Kelce, I think, is a guy on the rise. So I kind of had one at five on the fall and one at five on the rise.
Yep.
You know, Travis Kelce suffers because he plays in Kansas City. He's not in a big media market. He doesn't play in an offense with a quarterback that features the tight end particularly. But, you know, 67 catches for 862 yards and 5 TDs, that's a pretty doggone good year. Gates's, you know, suspension tainted him a little bit for me, too. Then at four, I had Olsen. And, you know, again, like you say, 1,008 yards, 84 catches. I'm not a, you know, again, give me the more traditional guy, the, you know, the Kyle Rudolph, the Gronkowski guy, because Olsen is not particularly effective when you line him up at a tight end and tell him he's got to go, you know, reach the defensive end on the stretch play. But, you know, he is a threat catching the football. I like Martellus Bennett a bunch. Now, Marty B, and he's all these personas on Twitter and all this stuff. And he's going to bring you some of that stuff. But he gives you an unbelievable, I mean, almost impossible matchup inside, because he's 6'6", and he can run 4'6", and he's got an incredible catching range. So all you have to do is get the ball near him, and he's going to make the play. If there was more desire to be the greatest, I think, out of the kid, as opposed to he loves life and loves living life, you know, he could be as good as there is in the game. Because physically, in my mind, there's nobody in the game, with maybe the exception of Gronkowski, who has his combination of physicality and, you know, athleticism. Graham gets my vote at 2, and again, it sounds like I'm saying begrudgingly, and I guess maybe I am a little bit, because I agree with you. I think that one hole in him is the fact that he's not a physical guy. And I think that kind of wore its course in New Orleans. I think they felt like they could move on from him, even though, you know, you look at the numbers, his time in New Orleans, 355 catches, over 4,000 yards, 46 touchdowns. I mean, that's incredible numbers. So, obviously, he is a phenomenal player, and he deserves that number two ranking. And I agree with you, Gronkowski's head and shoulders above everybody, because he can do everything. He can, you know, there's nothing in the game that he cannot do, whether that's make that one-handed catch in the end zone to win a game for you, make a key block. He competes every down. He's a warrior. He'll play hurt. He does everything that you would expect out of a tight end. And really, when you go back, and I was just watching A Football Life the other day on Mike Ditka, he probably has got a lot of Ditka in him.
Oh, yeah.
Ditka was, you go back for his day, Ditka was a little bit out there now. So he's my preeminent Mike Ditka tight end, and you know, I love him to pieces. And I hope he can stay healthy for these next 5 or 6 years and finish out his career and go on into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he is fun to watch. Jeff referenced Martellus Bennett there. He led all tight ends with 90 catches in 2014. So there we had to come up with 5 slots, and we used 8 players between us, which shows how difficult it was and how many good tight ends there are out there. As we look down the list, Jeff, and next best and ones around the league we like, I think Indianapolis have a good pairing, actually. The only tight end pairing to score over 8 touchdowns each last year, that's Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. And then here's a couple of guys I really like. I think Delanie Walker of Tennessee would get a lot more attention if he was not on the Tennessee Titans. And I actually called him out when he was backing up Vernon Davis in San Francisco. I thought he was a very athletic player and one to watch. He's developed nicely. I think Charles Clay is a good player and was one of those in Miami who could be moved around. He could play fullback. You could put him at running back every now and then, H-back. You could play him at tight end. And just as I've finished that little monologue, that shows how far Vernon Davis has fallen. Neither of us had Vernon Davis in there. A couple of years ago, you'd have put him challenging Jimmy Graham and possibly challenging Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, you know what? That's exactly right. And, you know, you talk about Clay, and, you know, when the Bills formulated their offseason plan and they started talking about free agency, the guy that they had targeted, you know, as a high, high priority in their system was Charles Clay. They wanted that flexibility at tight end. You know, they had Scott Chandler there, who was a more than adequate receiver, but they really felt like Charles Clay gave them so much more, because in that power running game, he can play fullback. He can block enough at the edge. He's a great H. He gives you, you know, downfield threat in the passing game. So, you know, that's the kind of guys that are out there. And like you say, we don't even talk about Vernon Davis. And heck, well, here's a guy that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago you thought was going to redefine the position because of the strength and skill ratio that he has. So,
and I hope he comes back. You talked about. Sorry, Jeff. Go on.
No, it's a position, I think, where you find more and more players coming into the league all the time. Used to be it was hard to find tight ends.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the real difficult positions to find. You know, it's interesting. Stanford has turned their program around in the last 10 years. And one of the ways they've done it, Neil, is they went out and they just recruited tight ends out of high school. Mm. All 6'4 kids that maybe were too thin or couldn't run good enough or whatever, but they found another place for them to play. And I think that's, you know, that's an interesting way of going about, you know, finding players is you find that long bodied kid and, you know, that can run a little bit and has some ball skills and, you know, plug him in there and let him play.
Jeff, one of the guys I had on my list at number 5 was Julius Thomas. And I guess Denver felt they could afford to let him go. Denver quite like Virgil Green, who's a young player with some promise. They also signed Owen Daniels. Now, what Julius Thomas is going to have to prove is that wasn't the Peyton Manning factor in back-to-back 12 touchdown seasons, because there's some raw talent there, but now it's all about if you need to prove it year in and year out, and maybe going and doing it with a Blake Bortles now will show that Thomas deserves to be considered in the top 5. It is going to be a challenge for him, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but you know what? It's an opportunity, too.
Yep.
It's a chance for him to take more of a focal role in the offense, because when you're in that offense in Denver, you're one of 4 or 5. He's going to be an opportunity for Bortles to get that security blanket. That's the thing about the tight end position a lot of people don't understand. When it comes to dumping the ball down and taking the hot throw and those things, a tight end who can get off the line of scrimmage and beat a linebacker is really, really critical, because those are much easier throws than, you know, throws outside, slants and outside against press man coverage or fades outside. So I think it's an opportunity for Julius Thomas. You know, you talked about Owen Daniels. There's another guy. Golly, how about him? How about Dennis Pitta? I mean, they're all over the league. Jacob Tammy, there's guys all over the league that are really, really skilled players. I mean, Owen Daniel is in that system. He's a perfect fit for that system. You know, Zach Ertz is a guy in Philadelphia we didn't talk about. I mean, this league is loaded with great tight ends.
Yeah, I interviewed one last month in Miami, Jordan Cameron, who was a Pro Bowler in Cleveland. So, I mean, you know, a guy who might be way down our lists, but it's a deep, deep position, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah. It's absolutely as deep as I think it ever is, as has ever been. And I think maybe when you look top to bottom, impact players, maybe one of the more deep positions in the National Football League right now. And, you know, again, I know the history of football, and you go back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that was not the case. They were scratching around trying to find tight end.
So who did you like watching at tight end when you grew up, Jeff? Because for me, it was, I those famous images of Mark Bavaro dragging 49ers players on his back downfield. I absolutely loved watching Mark Bavaro. I was very pleased to be able to feature him in my book and interview him on the telephone, and I just thought he was fantastic. Athletically limited, tough as nails, absolutely tough as nails. I mean, who did you like, you know, historically?
Well, I think when you know, if you go back to when I first started watching football when I was a little kid, you know, Ditka was the guy at that position that you didn't have to know much about football, but you knew he was, you know, he was the guy. And then I mentioned Jackie Smith, who played for years for the Cardinals and probably best remembered for dropping a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl for the Cowboys that would have won a Super Bowl for him. You know, after catching, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of passes in his career from Jim Hart with the Cardinals. But, you know, when Kellen Winslow came into the game in San Diego, and, you know, we talk about how the game started to change, you know, that offense in Air Coryell really was the first one to really make the tight end a focal point of the offense. And Kellen Winslow Sr.'s skill set, you know, the ability to run down the middle of the field, the length, the long arms, the great catching range that he had. You know, and you know, before him, there was a tight end in Baltimore named John Mackey, who's in the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah.
That, you know, I can remember the old NFL footage of him when I was a little kid. But you couldn't tackle him. I mean, he would just punish DB. He'd catch the ball over the middle, and it was just guys bouncing off of him as he'd run down the field. So those guys, and you, like you say, Bavaro, and you start getting more into the modern era of tight end. You know, Bavaro certainly was that guy. He was the guy that was tough as nails, and it could do it all, could block, could catch, could, you know, get it in the end zone after he caught it. So it's been a really, you know, really interesting evolution of the position. And for all of us who had decades of NFL fandom, if you will, it's really kind of a cool thing to see how the position has evolved over time.
And Jeff, this podcast has come full circle because you mentioned Kellen Winslow Sr. And of course, Kellen Winslow Jr. had an off-season motorcycle crash. You might be thinking he was somewhat foolish. His career was never the same again, and he had high hopes. So, you know, we're back to the Jason Pierre-Paul situation.
Yeah, and you know, again, you're the Tennessee Titans, and you got a franchise quarterback, and he wants to go, you know, body surfing. Well, again, there's enough cases in point of guys who had, you know, situations like that. You know, riding a motorcycle, getting, you know, it's not. And a lot of times, it's not you; it's the other driver or whatever. I mean, you got to mitigate all the risks that you possibly can when you're paying these guys the kind of money that you're paying them, and they're going to be the face of your franchise for years to come. I think that deal's going to get done before training camp.
Yeah.
But you know, again, they've got some language they've got to work out. Speaking of deals, Neil, I got one for you. We had a little contest this week, and I put it out there on Twitter to all our followers to say, okay, if you can guess what tropical location we're bringing you inside the huddle from, I'll get you two tickets to a Wembley game. And Jack Humphrey, 87, was the winner. He picked Jamaica. I have no idea how he knew we were down here in this lovely country, but he is our winner, and I will be sending him to a Wembley game this fall.
Very nice, Jeff. Where are you going to get the tickets from?
I'm going to call my buddy Neil Reynolds. All right. He's got all the inside of us.
Good. There you go. Jack Humphrey, 87. Good on you. Good guess. And Jeff being very generous there. We like it. Just ingratiating yourself.
You know what? It's so amazing.
Go on.
Nah, it's just amazing how this podcast has continued to grow. And you know, I did an article for The Guardian that'll come out here in the month of July. And I think it just reflects what everybody from, you know, Alistair Kirkwood through the entire organization at the NFL UK offices, you and people at Sky Sports and Channel 4 and BT4, everybody that talks and brings the game to the fans. It's just an incredible, incredible ride to have watched this thing grow, and it's awesome to be a part of it. Like I said to you there, before we got on the show, it seems like 3 weeks since we've done this, and I look forward to it. It's the highlight of my week every week.
Well, when you lay around doing nothing on a beach all day, then the time does go slow, so it probably does seem like 3 weeks. I saw those beach shots. I thought you were in Bognor Regis or Cleethorpes or somewhere, you know, some British seaside, but that's why I didn't win the tickets. Listen, one question from the mailbag, and we're going to wrap up and let you get back to your life of luxury. I'm not jealous, actually I am. Why am I even pretending I'm not? I saw the pictures. You're in heaven, man. The New York Jets UK say, do you expect Darrell Revis to be able to fit into the Jets defense without Rex Ryan being there, or will it take time? Now, we know Jeff, Todd Bowles likes to be aggressive on defense, but he likes his corners to be aggressive. And for that reason, I think Revis will be all right. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. I think that Todd Bowles runs, while the X and O part of it may be different, and it's not all that different from what Rex, you know, does, it's the mindset that Todd Bowles brings to the defensive unit in New York that is so very similar. They're going to be ultra aggressive. They're going to go after the quarterback. They're going to put their corners up in press man coverage. Their defense in Arizona was built from the back to the front. It wasn't built from the front to the back. They got those great cover guys, and then they were able to apply pressure. And, you know, I'm excited. I mean, really, truly excited to see that AFC East. And the Jets are one of the reasons I'm excited to see that AFC East, because I just really think that they've helped themselves in the offseason with some of the moves that they made. If they can get any kind of decent quarterback play, I think they're going to be a team that you're going to have to reckon with.
Absolutely. Well, we are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. The pina coladas are calling. The waves are beckoning him to the shore. Come to the beach, Jeff.
Yaman.
Listen, you're the man and you deserve it, so enjoy. And we'll speak to you next week. Jeff, why don't we do, I'm just trying to think next week, if we do, we've done tight ends. Do you want to do like defensive ends, but we could do 3-4 ones, and we could do 4-3 guys. We could do. Do you want to do 3-4 defensive ends next week?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I look forward to that one. You know, I'm a 3-4 guy.
I know. I have to go back onto defense just to just to keep you happy. So this has
that
been...
That really hurts you, doesn't it? You probably get a rash when you start talking about defense.
I enjoyed tight ends. So there you go. Well, that's a quote to end the podcast on. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Jeff, enjoy your time in Jamaica. Until next week, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Neil. They made me do that, right? One of our followers on Twitter made me do that. No, aloha, Neil.